All right, paper 16, section 4, which is old single column, page 189. All right, I got a couple more sections here before we get to the cosmic mind sections, the classic paper 16, section 6, that you hear me say so often. Remember how, you know, we've seen this pattern before when we were doing the three infinite persons, how they would have an attributes section or even whole paper. So they're stepping along in kind of a similar fashion here. You do notice that the word functions is in there too, which reminds you of the deity. You know, thinking more just deity functioning as opposed to them as persons acting. So attributes, you know, sort of the deductive facts that are, you know, inherent in as a consequence of their nature and the functions. Let's see what they've got for us here.
Section 4, Attributes and Functions of the Master Spirits. The seven Master Spirits are the full representation of the Infinite Spirit to the evolutionary universes. They represent the third source and center in the relationships of energy, mind, and spirit. While they function as the coordinating heads of the universal administrative control of the conjoint actor, do not forget that they have their origin in the creative acts of the paradise deities. It is literally true that these seven spirits are the personalized physical power, cosmic mind, and spiritual presence of the triune deity, the seven spirits of God sent forth to all the universe.
Okay, a couple of things in there. Just again, you notice how they've done this so often here where they're describing them as the paradise deities. See, again, just tied with that the fact that there's the word function in the title. You know, in contrast, see, to conjoint actor, which is the personal, designation for the third source and center. So they're giving you just the way they're talking about it. They're not specifically limiting, but they're just reminding you of the play between the personal and the deity. And of course, bringing in the threefold actuality, very definitively. And then, for those of you who aren't familiar, that's a little line from Revelation. And you can probably suspect that they've modified something there. I mean, not too likely that Revelation is going to say to all the universe. So they changed Earth to universe, and they capitalized seven and capitalized spirits, and ta-da, you've got a nice little statement about the seven master spirits. So it's just one of those simple examples of them tweaking things, and there's a very kind of secret reason for doing that, that doesn't come out right here. That's something that comes out in the process of that pattern universe paper about why they chose to use this particular passage from Revelation. I don't want to go off on a tangent on that, but it seems a little bit odd. It's like, well, why grab this little snippet from Revelation and purposely modify it? It's not like you glance down, you don't see a whole bunch of Bible quotes here or something. You know, it should strike you as a curiosity. And it is. It's a clue. It's a technique in play there to get you to follow the breadcrumbs and put some things together. What else have they got here for us?
The master spirits are unique in that they function on all universe levels of reality, excepting the absolute. They are, therefore, efficient and perfect supervisors of all phases of administrative affairs on all levels of super-universe activities. It is difficult for the mortal mind to understand very much about the Master Spirits, because their work is so highly specialized, yet all-embracing, so exceptionally material, and at the same time so exquisitely spiritual. These versatile creators of the cosmic mind are the ancestors of the universe power directors and are themselves supreme directors of the vast and far-flung spirit creature creation.
That last little bit, don't forget what we're in the midst of with these two papers, 16 and 17, on the supreme spirits. So they're throwing in that little reminder. You know, by and large, we're just looking at that issue, the supremacy facts. We're not trying to fully comprehend all of the super supreme stuff that might be going on. So they're part of the supreme spirits, and so they're kind of reminding you that after starting out the paragraph with a, you know, that statement, they function on all levels below the absolute, and that's an important fact. But in terms of, you know, an initial understanding, think of them as, you know, some of the supreme spirits, and try to get them fit into the picture of how they're engaging the total finite.
Not to get off topic, mm-hmm. but what do you feel will happen to the master spirits when the supreme is fully evolved, when light and life, everything is settled?
Well, that's that fact that, the master spirits are unique in that they function, not they have the ability to function. They already are functioning on all those levels. They already are functioning in ultimate terms to the absonite universe, and in, you know, co-absolute terms to the cosmos infinite. They're already doing that. It's just all we see is the, you know, is what engages the finite. You know, just don't ever forget that you really want to, if you really to really appreciate beings like this, you have to let go of time. You have to just see, you know, contemplate the whole picture. You've got everything. You have the whole cosmos infinite, and they're engaging all of that in ways that, you know, are obviously infinitely beyond our imagination. And we're just trying to understand this tiny little measure of the cosmos infinite that we now can experience, the finite dimensionality of it. We're just trying to understand what kind of a shadow they cast here. The one little foreshadowing along, you know, more directly to your question, remember how they mentioned twice that there are seven segments of the outer space levels too. See, and that's, you know, pointing to their shadow in the absonite domain. You know, so even though we can't see that completed foundation yet in which there's absonite activity going on, we just see this evolutionary finite time, you know, picture where that foundation is still evolving into place. You know, transcendent of time, it's all there already. You know, and it's all populated, and there's all kinds of things going on. Yeah, and that's just a very kind of mind-bending thing to start to think about, you know, that to not force the universe to be in your image, you know, where I'm finite, therefore that's all the universe can be. The creator is infinite, so guess what? Yeah, the cosmos is infinite. And we're just slowly beginning an eternal journey of beginning to come into relationship with an infinite cosmos. We just see a tiny little measure of it right now. And what we see is not eternal. We see it in a this temporal sense. Yeah. It's as if it wasn't yet, but it is. You know, so just to flip time around like that, you know, it's an experiential. It's part of your experiential relationship to the cosmos infinite. that you have this sequence to your sight of it. You know, you're forced to sequentialize your relationship with the cosmos infinite. You can't just go, boom, I've got the whole thing.
I have a question. I have some numbers written here that I think must have come from you years ago. I have R1-4, 3-1, 4-5, 5-6. Do you have any idea what that was about?
No. Wait, is it R?
Yeah.
And there's a 5-6?
Yeah.
Okay, it wouldn't have been me, but someone's giving you passages from Revelation. That quotation that we just did, that's Revelation chapter 5, verse 6. Oh. And so they're giving you other spots in Revelation that mentions the seven flames or the seven spirits or the seven lampstands or the... Yeah. Just one little thing. Notice the one little sort of between the lines thing that they were doing in the middle there. Because their work is so highly specialized, yet all-embracing, okay, and then, you know, then a parenthetical sort of restatement of that, so exceptionally material and at the same time so exquisitely spiritual, okay, see how what they're doing? Okay, so highly specialized. Matter is the substance that expresses individuality. Highly specialized equals exceptionally material. All embracing equals exquisitely, you know, spiritual. You know, the substance that expresses unity. All embracing. So, like I said, you know, like you've heard me say something, they never miss an opportunity to try to get you to start thinking more philosophically about matter and spirit. So that you can come to understand the Isle of Paradise is not just absolutum, not just the absolute of matter, but the absolute of individuality. You know, and the actuality of the second source and center is the absolute of unity. So just always be trying to challenge yourself to have a more and more philosophic relationship with what you're reading, because it's only in that, you know, associative consciousness that the truth is going to start to flow. You're just going to start to feel the truth of what they're telling you. It won't just be a whole bunch of facts that you have to try to somehow hold in your head. It'll start to have a dynamic motion, and you'll start to have a relationship with it here and now. No matter how transcendent the thing you're studying is, there's the one truth that the yellow man, you know, worshipped. And, you know, you're looking for that because you want to obey that truth. And you can find that truth high and low, here and there, you know, far and wide. Notice when they so purposely give you a parallel like that to challenge you to put them together. All right.
The seven master spirits are the creators of the universe power directors and their associates, entities who are indispensable to the organization, control, and regulation of the physical energies of the grand universe. And these same master spirits very materially assist the creator sons in the work of shaping and organizing the local universes. We are unable to trace any personal connection between the cosmic energy work of the master spirits and the force functions of the unqualified absolute. The energy manifestations under the jurisdiction of the master spirits are all directed from the periphery of paradise. They do not appear to be in any direct manner associated with the force phenomena identified with the nether surface of paradise.
Did you notice, when they started that off, we are unable to trace any personal connection, okay, so just that, you know, the personal thing there to start with, between the cosmic energy work of the master spirits and the force functions of the unqualified absolute. Remember when we were talking about nether paradise and they kept using that functions thing and the on-ramp individuality viewpoint term of the unqualified absolute, for the more advanced student, you're putting two and two together, you know, the unqualified absolute, you know, just directly, literally doesn't function. It's a reservoir. You know, it's from the unity viewpoint that it's a facet of deity. Does anyone remember which facet of deity?
Infinite capacity.
Right, the infinite capacity is a facet of deity that's functioning. You know, and that deity can have a functional relationship with the master spirits, even as persons. Okay? Even though it isn't personalizable deity, still. So that's what they're getting at. They're, you know, they know there is a dynamic connection between these very transcendent things, very transcendent aspects of the master spirits and just purely transcendent facts like the infinite capacity. But it doesn't manifest in any way that we can observe with this limited sight, this limited relationship with the cosmos infinite. That's, you know, another way of saying what they're getting at there. Okay, but just, you can see why they said functions up in the title. See, they're slipping that in over and over. They're wanting to remind you that since we spent so much time up to this point stressing that the master spirits are personalized deity, you know, they aren't just divine persons, they're God. That deity then, the fundamental quality of deity is unity. And so it doesn't matter if the deity is high or low or whatever, you know, it's all, you know, connected intimately as a unity fact. And so they know that there are subtle connections, and but they're just pointing out it's not manifest, you know, in any direct way. And another thing that's tied to that we've talked about, you can go up from the finite, and you can observe if you're have sophisticated perspective. You can observe higher and higher transcendent facts coming down to you until you get to the absolute, and then it's like it's not coming down, it's like it's coming up from the bottom. So that's another reason why, you know, you've got one thing that you can tell is coming up from very, very high reaches, but where they would connect, you're not going to see is a... Yeah. Yeah. And what did it say, too? The master spirits are unique in that they function on all levels of reality, excepting the absolute. Okay, so you're not going to see something that's so high in them that it wraps around to the other side and seems to be lining up with the unqualified absolute. Okay, so, or you might say, the functioning of the absolute capacity. Yeah. That's what you were really looking at, is that deity functioning, you know, on an absolute level rather than an infinite level, is the infinite capacity. All right. Nonetheless, all that complication aside, why would they even be bringing this up in the first place? You'll see as we get into it a little bit more. The master spirits are heavily involved in, you know, in all the goings on, not just spiritual, like they've, you know, said right from the beginning here. You know, they're very, very intimately involved in all the physical stuff. So, you know, and so of course is the unqualified absolute, a very foundational fact of all that. So that's why they're bringing that up.
Unquestionably, when we encounter the functional activities of the various Marantia power supervisors, we are face to face with certain of the unrevealed activities of the master spirits. Who, aside from these ancestors of both physical controllers and spirit ministers, could have contrived so to combine and associate material and spiritual energies as to produce a hitherto non-existent phase of universe reality, Marantia substance, and Marantia mind.
Okay. So now that's something that you don't often, you know, bring, you know, to your recollection when you're thinking about Marantia facts. You know, how intimately the master spirits are behind all of that. Now, the one thing to really kind of notice in there is could have contrived, you know, that using of the word contrived. You've heard me paraphrase that many times. You have two natural substances, matter and spirit. You have a third artificial substance, Marantia. Okay? See, could have contrived so to combine and associate material and spiritual energies. Marantia substance is an art form. Okay? It's crafted into existence. It's art. It's an artifice. It's artful. It's artificial. Okay? In the direct sense of that word. Not fake. Okay? It's an art form. It has to be constructed by an artisan, okay? You don't, in any sort of a direct way, you don't have an artisan making matter and spirit substance, you know? So much so that Lucifer, for instance, can decide that those things just either, you know, acausally always existed or magically brought themselves into existence or something like that, okay? Lucifer's no dummy. I mean, if he looks at this cup, he doesn't go, wow, I wonder how that brought itself into existence. He knows that's an artificial structure, that there a being made that. He knows that, you know, he's watched beings make, you know, Marantia substance. It's an artificial substance. But he's never watched anyone make matter, you know, or spirit. It's like, well, doesn't he watch the master physical controllers? It's like, well, yeah, he watches them take automatons and play with them. You know, so really, you know, you have to back it up. He doesn't imagine, like current scientists might, you know, in a materialistic way, that, you know, protons and electrons or something, you know, brought themselves into existence. He just thinks that automatons, you know, brought themselves or bring themselves into existence of their own whatever you want to call it, magic. And, you know, and then people play with them. All right, so, you know, it's totally proper to call that, it's an artificial substance. And it's helpful to resurrect the word artificial from being turned into this almost totally negative sort of a word. It's art, okay? You know, it's literally, you know, and what is true art? It's when you take material individuality and so arrange it that it points towards unity when you observe the arrangement. Bridging individuality and unity, or at least suggesting that bridging. It's like Marantia, you know, and they even say that in a few places in the book, you know, that art is Marantia. You know, it's this attempt to bridge between the individuality and unity, and you know, and part of the art is the master physical controllers doing some sort of a hands-on manipulation, opening up of this material energy system so that you can weave spirit energy into it. You know, in this very to produce a hitherto non-existent phase of universe reality. It's like, you know, who could have imagined to twist it like that and then do that, you know? So, see, even, you know, the authors are even quite impressed by the creativity to see that you could do that, that you could combine the two energies that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And always, you know, when we start to consider Marantia's substance,
at some point soul has to enter that conversation. Are these guys contriving that? Because, I don't...
Well, remember when we talked about ascending to Aeneas, the fact of your soul is deeply mysterious. That's, you know, Marantxa, master physical controllers and Marantxa power supervisors aren't there doing that.
Right.
You know, the adjuster is bringing that into existence. And so, you know, that's part of the mystery of how that can come to be without the normal hands-on artisans, you know, playing with it with their fingers.
They don't not only mention Marantxa substance, yeah, but they also right, say Marantxa mind.
Right, that you have this mindal energy phenomenon, which is somehow more heterogeneous-like than homogeneous-like, so that it can directly interface with Marantxa substance. I mean, you know that when we get up there and have Marantxa mind, you've got sort of the typical local universe mind that angels are using and stuff like that, that's sort of parallel to that Marantxa mind. But again, they have a homogeneous blend of energy that mind has to seed on. So the mind is going to have some sort of a homogeneity to it. Just flip it around the other way. I mean, if we have this woven substance that it's going to seed on, it must have some sort of, you know, twofoldness very literally to it to match up with that, which is even kind of harder for us to picture since we don't want to think of mind energy as a substance like matter and spirit so that we can use a, you know, an actual like woven fabric analogy to understand it where the fibers are at right angles to each other. You know, what exactly, how do I understand this liquid sort of, you know, having two orthogonal components in it? That's pretty hard to imagine. Now, that sounds really artful to craft mindal energy that can have that characteristic.
What do they call what's moda?
Well, moda is Marantxa wisdom, basically. Okay. You know, it's that... symmetric consciousness, you know, and really in that point it goes beyond symmetry to actual harmony consciousness that is the all-encompassing sort of phenomenon of Marantxa consciousness in the same way that your spirit of wisdom is attempting to wrap itself around the other six adjutants and create a symmetry amongst them. You know, it's the real wholeness aspect of that Marantxa mind. It's a direct consciousness of the harmony, of the universal harmony. Whereas right now, you know, you're just trying to reach up to said harmony. Have your mind be affected by it, but your mind can't directly embody it yet. You know, in a really direct way, because adjutant mind can't take on that form.
So the motive that's in the book is actually just human thought that's close to that, but it is as
right. That's human wisdom.
Right.
But see, you know, it's the parallel. If motive is Marantxa wisdom, and then you take human wisdom, so you can bring them into, right. You know, you can suggest. It's like, well, take the human wisdom and try to reach up from that.
Try
yeah.
To line it up as close as you can.
You know, just imagine trying to. Let that reach upward. There's no direct motive that can be given to us. I mean, we can't consciousize this. We have no way to even relate to it. So the best they can do is give you adjutant wisdom, you know, and suggest that you lift it up as much as you can. You know, seek higher and higher wisdom, starting with that wisdom foundation, and you're moving in the moda direction then. You know, you're moving towards moda. But you're not going to get to moda in this life. I mean, you know, by and large, you can't just immediately get to moda even in the next life.
Can you get to it before you fuse with your adjuster?
If you're, you know, right, I mean, when you become a first circler, you know, you're starting to transfer the seed of your consciousness some. So there can, there can begin to be, you know, I mean, right, you know, remember right now, I have another self. My soul is a separate self. It's a Marantxa structure. It has Marantxa mind seated on it. There's a Marantxa mindal self that's making decisions right now. It's thinking, you know, it has some initial moda-like consciousness. That soul does, even though I don't. Okay, you know, and I have no intimate connection with my soul. But when I start getting up to being a first circler, there can start to be, I mean, when you bring the seventh adjutants together into the harmonious fact that is a seventh circler adjutant consciousness, that is essentially Marantxa mind. So you've followed the adjutant mind up until it comes back together in as the Marantxa mind that was split apart to make the adjutant mind. Yeah, and so at that point...
Don't you mean a first circler?
What did I say?
Seventh circler.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, first circler, yeah. Yeah, thanks for correcting me on that. Right, so, you know, so definitely, you know, there's some possibilities when you become a first circler for some sense of this. But it's still going to be, you know... Until you fuse, your personality is still identified with your Marantxa mind, not with that adjutant mind. I mean, the other way around. Still identified with your adjutant mind, not that Marantxa mind. Okay, I'm going to have to watch myself tonight. I'm in reversal mode here. Okay. So the fact that that personality is still identified with the adjutant mind, you know, that's... There's a barrier, a divide there still, yeah. So, you know, and you to really have full blown moda consciousness, you need a personality identified with that Marantxa mind. Okay, you know, for another reason, like I was saying, I mean, moda is a system of harmony, you know, and where is that? That's down here, the personality block. That's you know,
so
where you're getting it,
like
that.
So layers and angels and other beings that are they able to come get it?
I mean, secondary midwares. Yeah, I mean they understand that. But see, once you have a more angelic mind, you know, like even a primary midwayer, I mean, they're not using Marantxa mind. They're using the local universe mind that's parallel to that. Doesn't need to seat on Marantxa nature. You know, so you can kind of think of it as taking the woven thing and stirring it together into a homogeneous blend, like homogenizing milk. Yeah, and so within that more homogenized mind of that most of the other celestials in the local universe are using, within that are the elements that we have. They have, you know, the equivalent of moda consciousness. They have the equivalent of the cosmic intuitions, you know, et cetera, the Holy Spirit, it's there. It's just, it's not all with us. All these little parts are all separated out, and we have to choose to bring them together, and they just have it all together by nature. Okay, let's see. There might have been something else, but I can't remember what it was. Let's go.
Much of the reality of the spiritual world is of the Marantxa order, a phase of universe reality wholly unknown on Urantia. The goal of personality existence is spiritual, but the Marantxa creations always intervene, bridging the gulf between the material realms of mortal origin and the super universe spheres of advancing spiritual status. It is in this realm that the master spirits make their great contribution to the plan of man's paradise ascension.
Okay, so now maybe I'll just to stress it, because it's an important point to that doesn't sink in when you first start studying the revelation. You know, very definitively, think of the local universe part of your ascension as, you know, a Marantxal domain. You're doing raunchy stuff for a long time. Sometimes it's easy to forget that and just put the raunchy stuff on the mansion worlds. That's what the whole local universe is about. I mean, in many ways, you take the nature of the super universe and you have it downstepped and made maranchal in the local universe. The local universe is a maranchal shadow of what's above. And that's why you have three levels above, so you have three levels in the local universe. So you go through individuality, associativity, unity, but all in a maranchal envelope, you know, as a scaffolding, as a bridging mechanism. You know, and then you do it in full direct form, you know, liberated from the scaffolding of Marantia. And you engage individuality, associativity, and unity sort of in the raw, directly, you know, and really take on the differential between unity and individuality without the help of Marantia sort of bridging some of the gap for you, kind of in the same way as the Spirit of Truth, is a ministry of the local universe creator. See, that Spirit of Truth bridging the gap between third circler and seventh circler for you right now. You can't take on, actually, in and of yourself, bridging that differential yet. You know, but you can if you get some help. You know, so that's what the whole local universe domain is, this you know, gradual on-ramp, taking you up until you're ready in and of yourself to take on bringing individuality and unity together directly in your mind. You becoming the harmonization of the full differential. And again, you can almost forget that we're reading about the Master Spirits, so occasionally you're reminding you. See, I mean, just that discussion to remind yourself that, you know, that you're ultimately giving thanks to the Master Spirits for that possibility. That you can start out as a purely material individual and one day be a first stage spirit. You know, who should I thank for that ability to bridge that vast gulf? The Master Spirits. Yeah.
Now, with them. Marantia substance in this super universe be essentially the same as a Marantia substance in another super universe?
You know, you've got a flavor for every one. There's a difference in every one. Yeah, because it's, part of the art of it all is, is under the dual leadership of the local universe. There's 700,000 different ways to bridge the gap. And you're going to experience one. Yeah. And, why are we thanking, why are the Master Spirits behind this? Why are they the ones to ultimately thank? Because, again, on the absolute level, we have this absolute differentiation between individuality and unity, between the Isle of Paradise and the Eternal Sun. And the embodiment of the relationship between the two, bringing the two back together. That's the third source and center. So these are the primary expressions of the Infinite Spirit. They bring that that reintegration down to us. Yeah. It's innate in the third source and center, so it's innate in the direct offspring. And they can set it up. They know it intimately, what needs to be done to bridge the gap. They are the bridging of that gap. And they just so organize their super universe so that we can become as they are, an embodiment of the bridging of that gap. You know, of course, not just jumping across, but, you know, literally making the threefold actuality a unity, a tri-unity within you. You know, that's how you bridge that gap. You have to become a tri-unity like they are. You know, how did it all start out here? They represent the third source and center in the relationships of energy, mind, and spirit. They are that triunity. All right.
The seven master spirits have personal representatives who function throughout the grand universe. But since a large majority of these subordinate beings are not directly concerned with the ascendant scheme of mortal progression in the path of paradise perfection, little or nothing has been revealed about them. Much, very much, of the activity of the seven master spirits remains hidden from human understanding because in no way does it directly pertain to your problem of paradise ascent.
But obviously the subtext there is, you know, you'll start to get shades of what's coming after paradise when you get to the central universe, and definitely when you head out as a finaliter, now you are going to start to have a relationship with all this other aspect of the master spirits that isn't revealed. You know, and the obvious suspicion is they're not going to be, your relationship to them is not going to be such a thanksgiving for the background of your ascension scheme. You know, you're going to be in much more direct relationship to them in ways that we don't understand. You know, and where does that really direct relationship begin? When you're birthed out of the spiritual womb of the seventh master spirit and you turn around and can shake hands and say hi. Okay, now there's an actual personal relationship. You know, you're not just within their presence and in many ways a drop of water in their ocean. You know, you're finally going to individuate yourself relative to them, transcend the water that they are. And the drop is going to step outside on its own. That's in itself should be striking to contemplate. You know, that in order to have that experience, you have to achieve some sort of transcendence of a master spirit. Now, obviously, you're not transcending them in their total nature. But you know, when they reminded you up here, supreme directors of the vast and far-flung spirit creature creation, that you know, part of them that's engaging the finite, you're going to have to transcend that to some degree in order to have that experience of being separate, you know, from them. So, you know, you're it's like, well, when that really sinks in, then you're asking, well, who's going to leverage me? How do I come to do that? You know, what could give me some sort of a fulcrum that I could leverage off of to, you know, to lift me up out of their presence? It's got to be something greater than any one master spirit. But it certainly must be related to the master spirits. Does that suggest anything to you, that little hint? Something we were just talking about?
Trinity?
Nah. Something? Nah. Remember we mentioned there was a thing that they just mentioned in passing that you couldn't figure out quite what to do with. Do you remember that? It was called the Sevenfold Spirit. Remember that? The collective expression of them? The superadditive consequence? Above them? See? If you just think about it logically, you can suspect that Sevenfold Spirit is going to be playing some fundamental role in this ability to begin to transcend your relationship to a single master spirit, because it's a collective expression. It's exactly what you're looking for, something that's related to a master spirit but transcendent of a single master spirit, their collective deity expression. All right. Let's see. I guess, okay. Was that? Let's see, where were we? Did we read that?
He's ready to
Okay, all right, yeah. So, all right, yeah, I think we're just ready. Let's jump in. Let's get this list a little bit. So read that intro and then the first two items in the list.
It is highly probable, though we cannot offer definite proof, that the master spirit of Orvintun exerts a decided influence in the following spheres of activity. 1, the life initiation procedures of the local universe life carriers. 2, the life activations of the adjutant mind spirits bestowed upon the worlds by a local universe creative spirit.
Okay, so you got to see a pair, you have life, you know, the word life is in that first pair. The specifics of both of those is beyond our immediate scope, but it's the specifics fall out of unpacking the central universe. And that unpacking of the central universe, a lot of that hinges upon picking up on the clues, some of which I've alluded to as we're reading along here. But let me just give you, without going into the details, specifically what they're referring to there that's related to the master spirits. The life initiation procedures of the local universe life carriers. The bestowal of life animation, obviously, is what's being alluded to there. We're not talking about that first phase of life animation. We're not talking about just the living vitality. We're talking about that second phase, the reproductive spark. Okay, the bestowal of that reproductive spark is very definitively linked back. I mean, you know it's going through the creative mother spirit, yeah. But follow it back. It's very definitively linked back to the master spirits, the reproductive spark. Okay, so that's what that first one is about. You know, and so when they say life initiation, you know, a lot of times they like when you read the historical geology here in part 3, they talk about 550 million years ago initiating life. Well, that initiating eukaryotic life that requires a reproductive spark, you had prokaryotic life before that, okay? But you're initiating evolutionary life. It's going to have this reproductive ability, not just being able to produce a copy of itself, but to be able to produce anew, again. I mean, that's going to involve some measure of creativity, something connected to the creativity of deity, the third source and center. Okay, and then the life activations of the adjutant mind spirits. Alluding to the relationship between the 7 adjutant mind spirits and the 7 master spirits. Okay. And exactly how they're related, just the little hint that's right there in what they say, the life activations of the adjutants. Okay, when you're thinking about the adjutants, there's 2 aspects to that. There's the literal energy, and mind energy, just as an energy, is coming out of which of the 3 absolutes as a reservoir? The universal absolute, right. Right? And which of the 3 absolutes? Is the unqualified absolute, the universal absolute, or the deity absolute? In that order, those are the reservoirs for matter, mind, spirit. Unqualified, universal, deity, matter, mind, spirit. Those 3 absolutes are just the reservoirs for that energy. It's the reservoir of the potential for that energy, and you actualize it out of that reservoir. So just the energy of the adjutant mind is coming from the universal absolute. There's another aspect of mind. I've alluded to this occasionally when they refer to it. You not only have the mind energy, but you have the mind activity. This subtler fact is involved. It's called the mind activity. See the activations? The reservoir for mind activity, in contrast to mind energy, the reservoir for mind activity is the infinite mind. Remember how we talk about the third source and center? There's two designations that have the infinite adjective. So two aspects of a reservoir likeness. The infinite spirit, okay, that's the reservoir for third source personality. There's that other designation that has the adjective infinite, the infinite mind. You know, and the infinite mind is really the infinite mother spirit. Okay, that's a reservoir for something. What? It's a reservoir for mind activity. And that, beginning to distinguish those two and then start to work with that, begin to play with the physics of that, you know, lets you sort out the details that they're alluding to there about how this mind activity of the adjutants is directly tied back to the master spirits. Okay, so that's, make a long story short, the reproductive spark and the mind activity is tied back to the master spirits. Okay, give me the next two there.
Three, the fluctuations in energy manifestations exhibited by the linear gravity responding units of organized matter. Four, the behavior of emergent energy when fully liberated from the grasp of the unqualified absolute, thus becoming responsive to the direct influence of linear gravity and to the manipulations of the universe power directors and their associates.
Okay, so before we go into the details, you know, notice they're bringing up linear gravity there as you know, one of the common elements between those two. Just reminding you that of what they said about at the beginning when they were talking about the master spirits and the unqualified absolute and what association they could see between them. You have this spectrum, sort of. It starts out when you're just thinking about this energy, physical energy being actualized. Okay, it's coming out of the reservoir, the unqualified absolute. And so it starts as a story just about the unqualified absolute. But the more you go up from that starting point of physical energy, there's a continuous transference until finally, when you get up to the point where you have the electronic level expression of physical energy, and it's taking on this linear gravity response, you know, and especially subsequent to that, when you start to have full-blown atoms, especially you know bigger atoms. You know, it's totally moved into the hands of the agents of the third source and center, or the agents of the master spirits, as the case may be here in a particular super universe. Okay, so that's what they were alluding to. You know, you have this kind of spectrum from with the unqualified absolute having its hands on it on one end, and the agents of the master spirits having their hands on it the other end, and they're sharing in the middle, in a sense. There's this transition. Okay, so that's what they were referring to. You know, they're trying to get you up far enough away from the unqualified absolute that you really are talking about what the master spirits are up to, the agents of the master spirits. And then there's two aspects of that. The second part there, you know, item number four, is the individuation, the physical individuation itself we're thinking about. Like we were saying, you know, they start with automatons and they start playing with them and whatnot. You know, and even going all the way up to having atoms, do you remember which of the master physical controllers actually will play with atoms themselves? You know, a lot of the stuff that they do is at the sub-electronic level. But there's a particular flavor of master physical controllers that actually, you know, are really fully playing with it in that linear gravity level, literally taking hold of atoms and building things out of them. Primary associators, yeah. Who build prokaryotes, you know, build the physical structures, build that loop of DNA. You know, they're making those little machines in their image, you know, the little power entities that they're making in their image as the power beings. All right, so that sort of you know, manipulating of the individuations is part of where you see, you know, the behavior of emergent energy when fully liberated, like the behavior of it assembling into a loop of DNA, you know, and a, yeah, that doesn't just happen by itself, like current scientists think, okay. The agents of the master spirits are bringing that together. That behavior, you know, behavior that speaks of mind and, you know, engagement and personality management. Okay, so that's on the one end. And the first one is, okay, well, there's the individual things, but then there's also the environment. And there's a connection. When they refer to the fluctuations of energy manifestations, you know, if you have an atom, you have the nucleus, and then you have the electron system around it. That electron system, much more so than the nucleus in sort of easily observable ways, is, you know, interacting with the environment. You know, and the environment changes, and the electron system changes, fluctuates. You know, there's an ebb and flow of the electronic system, like it could be ionized or not. You know, that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, that electron system is having to match up with an environment. You know, in a very observable way, because it's a much more fluffy thing. You know, it much less stands on its own. It's like, you're going to assail me, I'm not going to do anything. You know, I mean, electrons are pretty fluffy things, and you know, and so they can get buffeted about pretty easily. You know, and so they'll fluctuate with a fluctuating environment as the tide, quote unquote, of the universe ebbs and flows. You know, the electrons are going to fluctuate with that. You know, the word fluctuation really is invoking the ebb and flow of a fluid, of a tide. Okay, so there's you know, the two parts, you know, sort of the inside and the relationship to the outside. That's what they're referring to there.
I was just thinking that for current scientists to deny a creator behind all that they see is a little bit like looking at a pattern of footprints in the snow and taking the belief that, well, those just happened all by themselves. It could possibly be somebody walking up there. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's nothing creating the footprints in the snow, that they just showed up.
Right. Yeah. Like I pointed out, I mean, not even Lucifer is that dense. I mean, he's, I mean, he knows that cup didn't assemble itself, okay? You know, but ultimately, current scientists think that cup assembled itself, because it thinks I assembled myself. You know, therefore, the cup assembled itself, even if they watched me assemble it. They think that magic just matter, you know, matter magically makes cups. I mean, it's just stupid. So not only will you see the hands of the agents of the master spirits if you watch, you know, if you think about an object, an individuation, but they're also doing things with the environment. You know, there's the hand of the master spirits agents in the big picture, and if you're watching an atom, you know, there'll be fluctuations that have to do with the fact that they're up to things in the big picture, not in just the small. You know, and so the guys that are working on small things have to take into account what the guys that are doing the big things are doing, and a lot of times that's very hard, because they just have to, you know, it's like, okay, so they're going to bring a local universe in there. Okay, you know, so they have to try to somehow conform with that. You know, they can't, you know, petition to have that changed. I mean, the big picture has to be what it is, and they just have to use their mind to adapt to whatever it is that the big picture requires. And so a little lesson for us, too, you know. We're always wanting the big picture to be changed so that we can finally do something. It's like, you know, if that's the way it worked, you wouldn't be minded.
You know? It's hard to imagine being able to manipulate atoms.
Yeah, how about manipulating automatons? Yeah,
that's even harder to imagine.
But, you know, I mean, a master physical controller just, you know, his presence, I mean, he just thinks it and a loop of DNA assembles. Remember how they talk about their body? See, is, you know, think of their body as, you know, this very, very individuated kaleidoscopic dance. You know, and so they have all kinds of precision of presence. the presence right here can be different from the presence right here, and they use that contrast to, you know, to connect two balls together with a toothpick, you know, like we're some, you know, making molecule models. You know, they can just, by their presence, they can manipulate, not only move, but, you know, construct, you know, what do I want to assemble here, and then what do I want to assemble here, and then I want to bring them together like this. See, all of that is a mind-imposed energy presence that just makes the matter move. You know, and so if you watched one of those original prokaryotes being assembled, it would look like magic.
You, I was just gonna say that.
Right. Like you would be watching, you know, through a microscope, you would watch the marble, you know, the thing I always do, you know, imagine you pour marbles on the floor, you know, and then sit back in in your chair, and you know, wouldn't you be surprised if suddenly the marbles piled themselves into a pyramid on the floor in front of you? Yeah, you'd be very startled by that. You know, that's what you would observe. You know. But you know marbles don't pile themselves. If the marbles end up being piled up, if there's a loop of DNA, someone piled it up. Magic, matter is not magical. Okay, it's mind-made and personality-managed.
Mind-made seems to consume magic.
When you can't see mind, it looks like magic. But if you could see the master physical controller, you'd see his hands, quote-unquote, and it wouldn't be so magical anymore.
Somebody associated that.
Yeah. Now the question is, you know, do you have enough logical consciousness that if you see the marbles pile up, you don't go, "Oh, I've discovered there's magic." Right. It's like, no, there isn't magic. If those marbles are doing that, there's hands I can't see. There must be.
Right.
Well, the current science says, no, there doesn't have to be hands.
It's just magic, period.
You know what? You know, everyone loves to pick on the poor guy, but you know, it's so easy. You know, Richard Dawkins says, just because you see a watch doesn't mean there has to be a watchmaker. It's like, well, yeah, I guess, you know, purely deductively, conceptually, no. But if you have any cosmic insight, it's pretty logically obvious that a watch implies a watchmaker.
There's actually somebody that's saying that.
Yeah, Richard Dawkins.
All of the smartest people on the planet say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's because they reject, you know, what your intuition can tell you. It's self-evident that a watch implies a watchmaker. That's not deductive. You know, it isn't a deductive thing. It doesn't imply it in a deductive sense. Say, well, they say, well, that's all there is. There is no such thing as inductive reasoning. There is no such thing as something being self-evident, something just being recognized. They reject that notion. They think that's delusion on our part. And so they force themselves to believe, okay, you know, you could imagine that you could just toss some atoms and they might just happen to all fall into a watch. I mean, I can imagine, you know, I could, here's an atom, hits there, here's one, hits there. You know, I could picture the flight of all of them, you know, if I took a watch and just pulled it all apart one atom at a time, you know, and had them all hanging on strings, I could, you know, I could just reverse the video and put it back together again.
Studios could do it in special.
Right. Right. But see, that's what he means. You know, it doesn't imply a watchmaker. I mean, you can imagine them falling into place. You know, it's like, well, yeah, but a watch is trivial
compared to
a one strand of DNA.
Right.
I mean, you know, like I try to point out. I mean, you know, you're not trying to get a tornado to make a washing machine as it goes through the junkyard. You're trying to get it to make the whole Maytag factory when it goes through the junkyard.
Yeah.
With power plants and it's all functioning and everything when the tornado leaves. Okay. Anything short of that, you don't have a eukaryotic cell. Not even one cell.
Tornado's more like a secondary
dissociator. Right. Yeah. And we all know that a tornado is like a secondary dissociator. It's not like a primary associator. Okay? It's not the agent of order. See, that's the thing. See, you're actively rejecting. You refuse to believe that there's order. Because if there's order, there's a God. And you will not allow that. Therefore, you conclude that order is just a passing fluctuation of randomness. You know, like watching the white, snow on an old TV screen. Every once in a while, it looks like there's a picture there. Yeah. You know,
I saw a face.
You know,
some of those people, I think, get that way because they can't imagine that there would be a God that would have such confusion and terrible stuff going on.
Yeah, well, you start with a poor initial assumption, and that doesn't allow for God, and then it's just all downhill from there. Start with a better initial assumption that will allow for God, because if your initial assumption doesn't allow for God, everything is magical after that. I mean, so you have to not want a if you're willing to accept a magical universe, well, then, okay, you don't need a God then. Okay, but then what's science for? I mean, if it's a magical universe, there is no such thing as science. It's just delusion. And it's like, well, we like delusions. We play delusions, and then we die, and that's the meaning of life. Well, no. It should be self-evident that that's not the meaning of life.
Maybe that's an attestation to the power of personality in this equation. That personality is so powerful, and especially when it's awakened in these higher beings, or these more intelligent people on the planet, they make their own universe, just like Lucifer did. And it even answers your question. These people, I don't like the universe the way I see it. This is how it should be. How I think it should be.
Well, isn't that special?
Yeah. and personality can do that. It's a unifier, and it unifies everything around that individual, just like Lucifer.
You can absolutize anything. Yes, right. The absolute dimension of your personality.
But science can predict things, and science has, seems to add up.
Yeah, well, you have to forget about those sorts of things when you're thinking about this fancy stuff. See, the schizophrenia that you have to impose upon yourself to have these thoughts, it's really you have to so compartmentalize, and if you try to push them on, they say, well, obviously it starts in randomness. We know we've proven that it starts in randomness, and it's an illusion that as it gets up to bigger and bigger constructs, it looks like there's order. It looks like that cup has an outer boundary and stuff, but it's just a passing illusion, like in the white snow on your TV set. You just have to keep repeating these thoughts to yourself to try to push the Holy Spirit out of your mind. Because if you let even a tiniest thread of the Holy Spirit into your consciousness, it's self-evident that that's not true. Okay.
Another thing I was thinking was, when Jesus was approaching the Pharisees and he was trying to overcome the religious teachers of Jerusalem with his arguments, and he tried to soft sell them at first, but they weren't amenable to that. What did you say in that SOS show? You said humility and some other word. They didn't succumb to humility in their character. So he had to hit him with a 2x4 after a while. He had to raise the dead. He had to,
didn't help.
It's like you do the soft sell long enough, and it just doesn't,
Is that guaranteed to that it'll succeed when you get a bigger board? 2x4 doesn't work. Get a 4x4. No, because you're up against. There's an absolute dimension of the gift that the Father gave them. They can trump anything you put forward. They have an absolutizability in their consciousness. You cannot trump that. Not even a master spirit can trump that. They function below the absolute. Okay? No one can.
Doesn't a child even do that? They'll absolutize. They'll try for a little while.
Okay. So, all right. So, anyway. So, back to the master spirits here. So we had two little things about that are tied tightly to life, and then a couple about, you know, the physical stuff, you know, sort of the environment picture and the individuation picture. And it's like, oh, that reminds me of something. Life is basically between the organism and the environment. You know, so see, they're pointing out that they deal with both the environment and the individuation and the you know, what's in between. You know, like they're telling you, they're involved in the whole picture. Okay.
Five, the bestowal of the ministry spirit of a local universe creative spirit, known on Urantia as the Holy Spirit. Six, the subsequent bestowal of the spirit of the bestowal sons on Urantia called the Comforter, or the Spirit of Truth.
Okay, so those two spirit ministries now, there's a couple spirit things. They're saying, okay, there's a connection between both the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth to the back to the Master Spirits. With that first one, can someone tell me what's that basic linkage between the Holy Spirit back up to the Master Spirits? It's coming up next week in our reading.
The cosmic mind.
Right, so and how specifically, how does that work? So you have the cosmic mind that's really sort of in more of the immediate hands of the Master Spirits. That gets downstepped, and that inner unity, spirit-like core of that cosmic mind, when you downstep, that inner core is called
the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, see, it's a very direct linkage. That's what they're alluding to. The three cosmic intuitions that are in cosmic mind come down to us in the Holy Spirit, that unity-like core, that spirit-like core of the cosmic mind. The more mindal, the more associative aspect of that cosmic mind gets separated from that unity-like core and becomes much more, so you have much more of a twofold phenomenon where it's all together as one fact up above more directly. You know, like we were talking about, you have Maranja mind, for instance, there's your associative part, and then the unity part is the Holy Spirit still. You know, you still have the Holy Spirit when you have Maranja mind. Because you're just trying to work back up. Like I said, you bring the seven adjutants together in parallel with the whole, you know, following the Holy Spirit up. You bring the seven adjutants together into one. And now you got Maranja mind, and you just keep going up, following that Maranja mind, paralleling along with the Holy Spirit, and you're converging. You know, the higher you go, they're converging back together until finally, as a first stage spirit, you can go outside of the local universe, you've brought them back together again. Brought your mind and the Holy Spirit back in, you know, into a homogeneous blend again. Okay, you're just following the downstepping back up. Okay, so that's that, you know, linkage that, you know, and they obviously don't see all the mechanics of that. There's a lot of subtlety of this linkage of the cosmic mind down to the Holy Spirit because it goes through a black box. It goes through the creative Mother Spirit, you know, and they can't dissect her, okay? You know, and who made that conduit within that black box? You know, next paper we're going to read about creative Mother Spirits being brought into existence. The Master Spirit plays a key role in infusing her with his nature so that this conduit can flow. And that's shrouded in deep mystery, that whole process, you know, of putting some of him in her so that this can go through her, down through her. All right, how about the Spirit of Truth? You might be able to remember this connection. Okay, right now the Spirit of Truth is poured out upon the spirit substrate of the Creative Mother Spirit. You know, it's a personal spiritual ministry. It's a signal upon a foundation, that her spirit foundation. He pours out his modulation on that substrate. You get outside of the local universe, you graduated out of the presence of her spirit substrate, but it says you're still connected to the spirit of truth. How does that work again? Does anyone remember?
Be on another substrate.
Yeah, what's the substrate? The next substrate up. Yeah, the reflective mother spirits. Yeah. And those are the reflective mother spirits of the master spirits. they're very directly involved in their creation. That's the linkage there. They're just pointing out there's all kinds of mystery to the details of these linkages of how that spirit of truth signal is not only here but also up there, and how it's seamlessly linked together and all this. That's what they're alluding to. Okay. But, conceptually, it has to be possible. I mean, the master spirit was intimately involved in both the presence above and the presence below. So it's not surprising they could be seamlessly linked together. Again, this fact that the master spirits are unique in that they function on all universe levels of reality, accepting the absolute. See how important that is? So that there can be this seamless continuity across these various boundaries. You have to have some being that transcends all those boundaries, beings that are really functioning within a certain level and beings that transcend so this all can be connected together. The master spirits are those really big picture, make sure it all comes together in a whole, beings. Okay, and this last one.
7, the reflectivity mechanism of the local universes and the super universe. Many features connected with this extraordinary phenomenon can hardly be reasonably explained or rationally understood without postulating the activity of the master spirits in connection with the conjoined actor and the supreme being.
Close enough. In association with the conjoined actor, yes, and the supreme being. All right, the reflectivity mechanism. Also, when you unpack all the details of the central universe, you unpack a lot of the details of the reflectivity mechanism. And what you see is you've got this very complex, multi-level, interassociated phenomenon that really could use something to keep it all together in a whole. See, the master spirits again. They're pointing out there's a lot of mystery as to how this really, really complicated system, much more complicated than you initially suspect, is all coordinated with beings on all these kinds of different levels and, whatnot. So again, this very transcendent nature of the master spirits can make that all function together as one system. And the other little aside there, to watch for this in other places in the book. In association with the conjoined actor and the supreme being, having the supreme being and the conjoined actor being mentioned in a pair like that, what's the deal there? When you look on the ellipse, and we have the fifth functional level total deity that, where the deity facets that are in their functioning are directly engaging us, like the sevenfold creature identified deity, obviously is directly interfacing with us, identifying with the creatures. So that, that fifth functional level, you can kind of say that's where you are. That's where deity is engaging you. On either side of that domain, conjoined actor, the supreme being. Yeah, you don't see it directly here, but, we're talking about the spirit here, and the supreme here. Okay, that they often mention those in a pair like that because you can kind of think of them as the boundary conditions on where you are. An existential boundary condition on one side and an experiential boundary condition on the other side. And you're in between them. You're in between the conjoint actor and the supreme being. You know, their actions penetrating and overlapping in where you are, see, coming from the two boundaries. Okay, so that's why they do that a number of times. And you notice that they're it's stated symmetrically. You know, the personal designation, the conjoint actor, and the he, the full he, power personality synthesis, the supreme being. So they're talking about the transcendent facts and the personality facts, that this universe is mind made and personality managed. See, from the boundaries. You know, the supreme mind penetrates one side, you know, the absolute mind down through the master spirits as the cosmic mind penetrates from the other side. See, and the two minds overlap. So it's mind made, dual mind made, and dual personality managed from the boundaries. That's the subtext of that. Okay, so see, they're just, so when all of a sudden you have 7 points sort of just spanning all the stuff that's going on in between those two boundaries, and the master spirits are involved in all of it because they're this transcendent of all levels. They're the big overseers of the whole picture, even more than we imagine. They're overseeing the whole picture, not just the finite, all at the same time. And really the only place that you begin to appreciate that even greater over-control on their part is when you start thinking about the whole reflectivity mechanism. Because to think about all that, you got to bring in a lot more than just finite stories. And so you start to really get, you know, a direct sense of how much they're encompassing in their activities. All right.
Notwithstanding our failure adequately to comprehend the manifold workings of the 7 master spirits, we are confident there are 2 realms in the vast range of universe activities with which they have nothing whatever to do: the bestowal and ministry of the thought adjusters and the inscrutable functions of the unqualified absolute.
I love the inscrutable. Yeah, you know, you can get the biggest microscope you can find and you still can't individuate it. You still can't understand it. It's inscrutable. Right. You know, in order to understand anything, you've got to be able to separate. If it's all blurred together as one, there's no understanding possible. That's why it's so important. If you're going to understand the revelation, you can't just look at it with your spirit eye where it all is just this wonderful spirit feeling. I mean, you've got to separate it into the parts or there's no understanding possible. You may remember there's a sentence in the book that tells you that point blank. You know, understanding is impossible until there's separation. You've got to sort the parts out very distinctly. This part's here, this part's here. You know, there's a threefold actuality. This stuff is here, this stuff is here. You know, sort it out first. Okay? Okay.
You can have different levels of understanding this book. It's not like either you don't or you completely do.
You can have different levels of understanding. But what I'm getting at is really understanding in distinction from experience. You can experience the unity of the book, but there's no understanding there. You can get a feeling from the revelation with just your spirit consciousness. There's no understanding. And it's like, well, but I want to call that understanding. Well, the Reverend's saying, don't do that. It's very important to not call that understanding, or you won't understand what understanding is. That's feeling. That's not understanding.
You're talking about
grokking. You know, and before you can we need to recover the word understanding from its being lost in a spirit fog. You know, we need to pull it out of the spirit fog that blurs everything together. Understanding is, the spirit of understanding is in which block? the associative block. How can there be association if there isn't two things that are being associated? There cannot be understanding until there's a separation between individuality and unity in your observation. If those are blurred together as one, understanding is not possible. You know, just like we say, you know, meaning. Meaning is not possible until things are separated from values. If you blend value into things, you know, if you animate, you know, that animistic viewpoint, you know, worldview, where values are innate in things, there is no meaning in that worldview. It's impossible. There can be no meaning until values and things are separate in your recognition. Because this is like, you know, a mean. You can't take the mean of one number. You're trying to take, in an animistic worldview, you're trying to take the mean of one number. That's meaningless. See, literally. I mean, there's a reason why this is called meaning, okay? And you just say it and see how silly that sounds, okay? There has to be two things, and you're taking their mean, okay? On arithmetic mean, add two numbers together.
Where is that statement actually?
Might be in the foreword. I'd have to look again. I can't remember. I think you can just see it here. You can discover that sentence. It's just right here. I mean, it's in the associative block. It's like, well, what if I don't have the spirit of understanding put into the associative block yet? What if I have it all blurred together into one thing? Well, the very first thing that I created, well, one of the very first things I created was this chart. When it finally sunk in, you know, I can't understand this until I separate things apart. And the moment that you lay them out and separate them like this, the moment, and you tell your spiritual consciousness, it's going to be okay, don't breathe slowly. I'm going to separate these things. Just breathe slowly. We'll see the unity eventually. Okay? We'll get there. But first, we need to separate it. We have to let the material consciousness separate it. Okay? And if the kind of unity, Mr. Spiritual Consciousness, that you're going to experience is going to be so much more satisfying than what you've experienced so far. Because this unity is not pure unity. Technically, what the unity is that? That's tri-unity. Tri-unity is much greater, much more satisfying. If you drink of that water, you'll never thirst again. That's the water you've been looking for. To feed the soul, which is a tri-unity fact. You can't feed the soul with pure unity likeness, with pure spirit. It's not a pure spirit fact. If you want your soul to not feel so starving and grasping, you need to feed it the kind of food that it can ingest. Tri-unity food. You have to separate the individuality from the unity and then have a super additive consequence of the relationship between the two. Something above what you had before. And finally, will satiate the soul, that super additive fact. Until that, you will be endlessly trying to satisfy it with that which can never satisfy it. You'll be combing the far reaches of the earth, trying to somehow find a spiritual experience that will give this lasting satisfaction to your soul, and you'll never find it. It can't satisfy the soul. Okay? That's the fifth epical revelation, the very first thing they reveal to you. They say separate it into things, meanings, and values. But I don't want to do that. Just trust me, they say. Trust me. Try it. You've tried other things, and you're still hungry, right? try this. Do you trust me enough to try it? Try separating it.
Try, T-R-I. Try it.
Is that the third or fourth paragraph?
It's not
page
working.
One?
Try it.
Right. Okay. let's see here. So, I can't remember how we got off on that tangent, but just that bottom line here quickly. So the thought adjusters and the unqualified absolute, you know, we've mentioned the unqualified. And of course, see, the thought adjuster, well, actually fits into what I was just saying. The thought adjuster is coming from the Father, which is prior to the separation. You know, it's a pre-triunity thing. So the Master Spirit's working with the whole triunity stuff. They're not going to have a direct connection with the thought adjuster because that's a pre-triunity phenomenon. That's the unity before the separation and the reunification as the triunity. See, so it's very separate from the triunity phenomena of the Master Spirits.
Master Spirits are specifically sub-absolute beings. Is that fair to say?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
But very high sub-absolute
beings. And the super ultimate stuff is only when, you know, through their collective expression, when you bring in the sevenfold spirit. Remember, they told you point blank, as an individual, they just have supreme and ultimate. All right, let's get another little section in here.
Section 5, relation to creatures. Each segment of the grand universe, each individual universe and world, enjoys the benefits of the united counsel and wisdom of all seven master spirits, but receives the personal touch and tinge of only one. And the personal nature of each master spirit entirely pervades and uniquely conditions his super universe.
Ah, remember how we've kind of set personality aside? You know, we've got a little paragraph here. You know, that's in play too. Okay, you have this particular deity flavor that's flavoring a whole super universe, you know, from that particular master spirit. But of course, there's a purposing on top of that. You know, it's absolutely unique. You know, that personality is absolutely, has an absoluteness, you know. So, see, there is that absolutely unique purposing of that particular flavor that's also in play. The universe is not only mind-made, that's that flavor of deity, but it's also personality managed in a very unique way. But again, no matter what personality we're talking about, the master spirit, mind, we're all engaging one super universe flavor. So all of our purposing may be absolutely unique, but it's all upon a common, it's all identified with a common fact, a particular flavor of unity, of the seven flavors of unity. Okay, so there's a commonality to the purposing in a super universe. Because none of us have a choice of what we're going to purpose. What we're going to purpose is given to us, and it's all of a common flavor. And then each of us purposes it in a unique way. All right. So that, keep that in mind, is, you know, to understand what they say as we go forward here.
Through this personal influence of the seven master spirits, every creature of every order of intelligent beings outside of paradise and Havona must bear the characteristic stamp of individuality indicative of the ancestral nature of some one of these seven paradise spirits. As concerns the seven super universes, each native creature, man or angel, will forever bear this badge of natal identification. The seven master spirits do not directly invade the material minds of the individual creatures on the evolutionary worlds of space. The mortals of Urantia do not experience the personal presence of the mind-spirit influence of the master spirit of Orvinton. If this master spirit does attain any sort of contact with the individual mortal mind during the earlier evolutionary ages of an inhabited world, it must occur through the ministry of the local universe creative spirit, the consort and associate of the Creator Son of God, who presides over the destinies of each local creation. But this very creative Mother Spirit is, in nature and character, quite like the Master Spirit of Orvinton.
Yeah, like I mentioned, we'll get into the next paper. You know, each of them gets flavored by the Master Spirit of the super universe that they're going to go to. You know, once the Creator Son picks what local universe he's going to do, you know, which super universe is going to be in, then she gets flavored to match that super universe by the Master Spirit. One little detail in there, mind-spirit influence. Okay, so the personal presence of the mind-spirit influence of the Master Spirit of Orvinton. So we know that the spirit is the root, and mind is added to that when they put them in that order. Remember, directly, the Master Spirit is the spirit womb of the super universe. The mind womb directly is the reflective Mother Spirits. See, so that's indirect for the Master Spirit himself. And the mind thing is a she thing, okay? Transcendence of mind, spirit is a he thing, okay? So see, for him, you know, since he's a, which is he? Is he a source center or a center source? If he's a he-like thing, source center, see? Like the first source and center, okay? See, so source, center, mind, spirit, center first, source second. The reflective Mother Spirits are center source. See? Okay. See, the Master Spirit and the reflective Mother Spirits are this reciprocal complementary pair. One center source, one source center for the cosmic mind. You know, and there's, you know, just a couple spots in the book where they kind of get you into that level of detail. But, but you know, they're always speaking precisely. All right. Let's see, anything else there? No, I don't think so.
The physical stamp of a Master Spirit is a part of man's material origin. The entire Morantia career is lived under the continuing influence of this same Master Spirit. It is hardly strange that the subsequent spirit career of such an ascending mortal never fully eradicates the characteristic stamp of this same supervising spirit. The impress of a Master Spirit is basic to the very existence of every pre-Havona stage of mortal ascension. The distinctive personality trends exhibited in the life experience of evolutionary mortals, which are characteristic in each super universe, and which are directly expressive of the nature of the dominating Master Spirit, are never fully effaced, not even after such ascenders are subjected to the long training and unifying discipline encountered on the 1 billion educational spheres of Havona. Even the subsequent intense paradise culture does not suffice to eradicate the earmarks of super universe origin. Throughout all eternity, an ascendant mortal will exhibit traits indicative of the presiding spirit of his super universe of nativity. Even in the core of the finality, when it is desired to arrive at or to portray a complete trinity relationship to the evolutionary creation, always a group of seven finaliters is assembled, one from each super universe.
Okay, see, so especially in that last paragraph, what I was pointing up, see, the distinctive personality trends. It's like, well, wait, I thought my personality was absolutely unique. So how could there be common trends? Well, is personality substance? No. It's something that's imposed upon substance. And if there's a commonality of substance that personality is identified with, then there's going to be a commonality of that actualization of purpose. That's what they're pointing out. So there's no escaping that. It's not like when you get to Havona, or even like they're saying, even when you get to the aisle, that somehow your substance that's come up from the particular super universe is swapped out for some transcendent substance. When you're a finaliter, you are your experiences. See, those, your experiences are made substance, and that substance has a unique flavor of your super universe. That's never going to change. You're never going to desubstantize yourself of that. If you did, you would lose your experiences. You carry it with you forever.
Fully appreciate that until we're in Havona. And mm-hmm. we meet these beings from other universes.
Right. That's what they tell you. You have no idea what difference is till you meet someone from another super universe. When you discover that something you were certain was absolute isn't, that there's a different flavor. It's relative. It's not absolute. This will be very startling to you. That anyone could dream up a different flavor of that pure, what you thought was a pure absolute unity thing. Nothing could transcend the purity of that. And then you discover what the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity looks like. That spirit unity that you thought was untranscendable. there's seven different flavors. As a matter of fact, you have to transcend that to a degree so that you can recognize your master spirit. Yeah, John? You had a...
Well, if the... it talks about the separateness from the master spirit of the stolen ministry of the thought adjusters.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you think it was correct to conceive of this as the personality that's endowed to us by the Creator Father as the basis, and then the flavor of the Master Spirit is endowed on top of that?
Right, so you have there's two things to you when all is said and done. A personality and a selfhood. The selfhood is definitively flavored by the deity of the master spirit of your super universe of origin. So you have this selfhood with his flavor. And then there's an absolutely unique personality from the Father that identifies with that selfhood. As you get into more sophisticated thinking about personality, like, going through paper 112. That's one of the things that you need to start to sort out is the difference between self and selfhood. Technically, that's all that personality is ever identifying with, is selfhood. Right now I have a self. One day it's going to die, and that self is not resurrected. And yet, they tell me that when I'm resurrected with a new self, the same personality identifies with it. Is this just careful micromanagement on God the Father's part? No, there's a selfhood that's common through all of your selves. You're going to go through a whole bunch of selves. But there's a common selfhood that threads through all of that. That unbroken fact of the selfhood is what the personality is actually identifying with. Remember, the personality comes from outside of time. Selves are very temporal, like we're talking about. That personality can't identify with a temporal fact like a self. It can only identify with an eternal fact like it is. There's an eternal, at least potential, unless you squish it. There's an eternal selfhood that it identifies with, eternity to eternity. That's, they have to be like or they don't meet. Okay, so that's selfhood. You know, this is what they're talking about here, really, technically. It's flavored by the deity of the master spirit. You know, like we're saying, the deity part here is the really important part, more than the personality of the master spirit. Because just like with the pattern for you is God. Okay, God is deity that's personalized. Personalized deity is God. The deity is the self, hood, and personality is identified with it. Okay? You're a downstepped expression of that.
Whose image are we made
in? But it's like, well, but I'm not deity. Yeah, well, see, the downstepped expression of deity that's not a deity is the selfhood. Okay. And, you know, at different points in the book, you know, this selfhood is a very, very complex thing. Many, many things flavor it. When all is said and done in eternity. But part of its flavor is coming from this adjuster, you know, which is not personality. But it all is one. You know, the selfhood has to be a fundamental one-like fact to strike step with the gift from the One on high, the Father. Be like it. So it's another way of thinking about, you know, this twofold consecration. Yeah, I want to consecrate my will to the perfect will of God the Father. But I'm not just a will. I'm a will, I'm a personality identified with a selfhood. I've got to make sure that selfhood is something that gift can identify with. If it doesn't embody the universal harmony, personality can't identify with it. So I need to consecrate my mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. I have to make myself have something that the Father's gift can identify with. Like to like. Mother to Father. Mother and Father innately can come together. Okay? So I have this twofold consecration. That's and it's just, we've never had any way to think about this or to separate self and personality, let alone selfhood and personality, until the fifth epical revelation. It's the first time in human history that this has been at all possible to finally sort this out. And once you have a selfhood and a personality distinctly separate, now I have the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two. I have something that goes beyond the distinction between mother and father, even. Well, if I go above the mother and the father, and they come together, what do I have? I have the infinite. I can actually begin to strike step with the infinite, being a child of the infinite. That, you know, beginning to see yourself in that clear, incredibly greater context should transform the way you live your life. It should make it so much different to know that you are just innately part of this unity that is deity like that. Even the infinite. And it just gets better the more you think about it. Like I pointed out, there's that paragraph, they say, oh, yeah, actually, there's all these different facets of deity. You can think about how the different flavors of deity flavor you in different ways. All that deity, that complex chart of total deity, there, how it all comes together as one in you. I mean, you are made in the image of that chart. You're that transcendently precise, you know. That's to see yourself that way, you know. And once you can start to do that, you don't get caught up, you know, in butting heads with someone like Richard Dawkins, thinking that you have to somehow contest against that. I mean, the only, if you think about him at all anymore, it's pity. How sad. Is it not sad to record that someone like that, with a lot of intelligence, doesn't take delight in cultivating, consecrating his mind to the universal harmony, so that he has no self-evident recognition? Oh, just, you know, the classic poster child for this, it's sad to record, Richard Dawkins, you know, the atheist, neo-Darwinist. The guy that wrote the God Delusion book, you may have heard about that one. Anyway, I mean, you know, an individual like that, it's just sad. I mean, you know, the only thing you can have is the same emotion that the revelators have when they look at us. It is sad to record. I mean, think of the tears on the record of his angels as they record his life. It is a sad record that they record. Okay? That's what they're talking about. And all it takes is just the faintest little acceptance. Okay? Just let go, Richard. It's okay. Just let go. Yeah, so that's what we're trying to do, is to move up out of the plane where these people choose to dwell. We're not going to butt heads with them. We're going to go up, and we're going to try to obey the truth that we're following up. We're going to try to live a life that's a simple demonstration of loyalty to something that they do not know. And without speaking a word, maybe you'll have an impact on their lives. Because if you can manifest a loyalty to supreme values, that will be so much more transcendently effective than any clever sequence of words that you can think of to say to that person, or some clever way of moving your body around and doing something that, you know, in their presence. That's what you're looking for. To live loyally is a tadpole. A tadpole that has a fragment of the Father inside and a thread of the Supreme. Right? You can do it. You know? Just do that one simple thing. All right, so next time, that whole consecration of the mind to universal harmony, that's what the rest of this paper is about. You have the section that introduces the three cosmic intuitions. The doorway to that fact. It's like, well, I'd like to consecrate my mind. How do I do it? That's what we read about next. And then there's the essay on that. You know, the classic three-section essay on the threefold actuality with unity. What does it look like when you really start to think about you and the cosmos and your relationship to the cosmos in this threefold fashion? What's the new dynamic of that? That's what that essay, those three sections, Section 7, 8, 9 are about. That's what we'll get into next time. Let's take a moment.